The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 26th of October, 2020. On the podcast today, Dan Betts, CEO of Hummingbird Resources, discusses their Q3 2020 corporate and operational update. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Gfinity, Myriad Advertising, Red Rock Resources. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of the list, at voxmarkets.co.uk. Check out lots of content there. There's one there on advanced oncotherapy, on Ware Education, on Bezant Resources. Plus, you can check out our COVID-19 index. The biggest rise of the day is Gfinity, up 13% to 4.35. Oh, in fact, it's just been overtaken by Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals, up 15% there, 12.5. Biggest fall of the day is 4D Pharma, down 7% to 124. Of course, check that out there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dan Betts, CEO of Hummingbird Resources, HUM ticker. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you've put out a Q3, of course, corporate and operational update. And, you know, it hasn't been without its sticking points, but it's been a resilient quarter, I thought. And, you know, everything's been thrown at you, from COVID to political issues, but you seem to pull through very well. And we'll go through the details on that in a bit. Before we do, Dan, as always, you've got different things going on there at Hummingbird. So for people not familiar, just give us a summary as to what you're all about, please.
Well, we are a gold producer with a gold mine called Yamfalila in Mali. We are developing a second project in Guinea called the Karusa Project, and we have a third project called Dubi in Liberia that we are developing with a joint venture partner called Pasofino. And in summary, Justin, that's us. We're looking to build a gold business that is diversified and has strong cash flows and a low leverage.
Yeah, absolutely. So Yamfalila, which is, of course, your flagship sort of business here, and it's producing and you're exploring as well. Take us through, if you could, Q3 highlights, maybe from a corporate level, if you could, then.
Okay, well, from a corporate level, I mean, let's start with, as you said, I mean, Q3 has been a challenge, Justin. I mean, we've had a military coup in Mali that meant the borders were shut for a large part of the quarter. We've obviously been continuing to deal with all the COVID-related issues that, again, are largely logistical. I mean, impacts on your supply chain and movement of people, and I guess that has issues on fatigue and, you know, morale as well. But, I mean, I think the team have done amazingly well, actually, in light of that. Mm-hmm. And we're also, Q3 is the wet season. We're coming out of that and coming to the end of it. It's been another tremendously heavy wet season in that part of the world. So that also presents day-to-day issues in the pit and dewatering, all the rest of it, but nothing insurmountable. So I think it's good to see us coming out of Q3 having overcome all those issues with us well intact. I mean, we're sort of maintaining guidance, probably realistically looking to produce at the lower end of that guidance for 2020. But I think in light of everything 2020's thrown at us, I think that's not a bad result.
Yeah, well, listen, let's start off with Yamfalila. Like I said, you heads down, still producing well there. And, well, you sold over 23,000 ounces there of gold. And you're paying down your debt there. And with gold in hand, in inventory, it's almost you've got net debt of zero now, isn't it, pretty much?
Well, that's really the point I'd like to get across, is whilst, you know, operationally you can focus on the ounces in the quarter, I think at a corporate level, Hummingbird's just making great strides forward. I mean, we are approaching net zero. At the end of September, we had, I think, 1 million of gross debt, if you net off the gold on hand and the cash against the outstanding bank debt. So, you know, where are we sitting today? I mean, my accounts department won't give me a number, obviously, till the month end, but we must be getting very close to being a net cash gold miner, which is an amazing milestone, really, if you think about it, in the development of a company. Mm-hmm. We've also motoring ahead with our development at Caruso, and our exploration results are looking to be extremely exciting. So I think there's a lot of development going on in the company that is really, really exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just take us through, I mean, it's an exploration there, Yanfolila, hoping to extend the life of mine there. What kind of results are you getting from exploration there?
Well, at the start of the year, our two main corporate goals were to get to net cash and to show a way to extend the mine life at Yanfolila, which is a short mine life, is a big sort of limiting factor on our market cap. Mm. And the way you obviously do that is by converting more resources into reserves or finding more resources. So our exploration is focused on the Kamana East underground deposit, where we're confident and increasingly confident with the results we've had that there will be an underground project there. But also of late, the drill rigs have moved up to the north of the license, where we've been drilling two resources called Sanamali East and Sanamali West, both infill drilling and step-out drilling. And we've had some great success there with lots of drill holes. I mean, we've since the post-end one we announced this morning, 16 meters at 9.64 grams a ton. I mean, that's a pretty tremendous drill hole. We've had quite a number of holes like that, you know, 100 gram meter intervals, which if you were just an exploration company, they'd be making an awful lot of noise. But of course, it gets lost as you're when you're a producer in sort of the numbers. But
yeah,
I think
that
marks that's really exciting stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, there's Caruso there and Dubi. So Caruso, what's happening there at the moment?
Well, Caruso at the moment, you may know there's an election in Guinea at the moment. Alpha Conde has just sort of been announced as the winner, I understand it. And I'm hoping that it will be business as usual. We'll get our mining permit before the end of the year, was our timetable, with a night start construction in the new year. And that project will be a sort of circa 100,000 ounces a year. Mm-hmm. And we're largely self-funded, organically funded to build that project. So what you're looking at in Hummingbird is inside really not much more than 18 months. A company that's producing in the region of 220 to 240,000 ounces a year with very little debt. I mean, at the gold price like this and an ASIC under 1,000, you're talking almost $250 million of project level EBITDA. So that's organic. That's within our business. That's all organic. We own the asset. We have the cash flow. We have the team. So I think the prospects for Hummingbird have really never been better.
Yeah, yeah. And that's of course, without even looking at Dubi, which your joint venture partner is developing and progressing there. Just take us through a summary of that.
Yeah, so Dubi is joint ventured with Pasofino, have bought some money and a first-class team who are mobilised on the ground in Liberia. They're working very, very hard to both explore and extend resources and also develop a feasibility study at the project. So I think within 12 months, we're going to be seeing a much more robust project in Liberia with a partner who has a track record of funding and developing projects. And, you know, the guys on the ground are very technically competent, but the guys behind Pasofino and Steve Dettels and Ian Stalker are also very corporately competent. I think we've got good partners there to both develop the project and develop the optionality around creating value for Hummingbird shareholders. I mean, I haven't looked recently, but I think Pasofino might be worth about 60 million Canadian dollars at the moment. And on a straight look through value, that should add $60 million to Hummingbird's market cap. Of course, it doesn't happen like that because people don't seem to do the look through. But I think if you were to get interest in the project from a third party through Pasofino, I think it would be a very tangible way to create value.
Yeah. And looking forward, like you say there, talking about the all-in sustaining costs, I mean, it has ticked up there, but I did the sort of the work on the numbers of what you sold and the average price compared to your all-in sustaining costs, and you're still clearing $15 million for the quarter, which is nice. So why did it go up? Why was the cost? Why did the cost go up?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, largely because we produce less ounces in the quarter. I mean, that's the biggest function in your cost. And the reason we produce less ounces is a little bit of reconfiguration of the mine plan during the wet season so that we were mining wetter areas rather than the high-grade ore out at the bottom of the pits when it was flooded and wet. So as that dries out, that gold will come through. I think we're looking for a very robust Q4. We've also, you know, I think it's just a combination of that and some challenges operationally in terms of the supply chain, as I mentioned before. Yeah. I mean, COVID and the coup has impacted our supply chain, and we have been slow on certain things, on resupplies and things to site. I think largely those problems are behind us, but they've certainly, you know, they have impacted the costs.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that the three issues you had there pretty much are not going to be there now. I mean, the weather's going to improve, of course. COVID, I mean, even now is suggesting, I don't know if you saw the news today, but NHS staff in our country are going to be vaccinated before the end of the year, they reckon. So we can see generally around the world, this, you know, we're getting to the end game on COVID pretty much, or the start of the end game anyway. So there's brighter times ahead. And like you said, the military coup, I assume that's over with, is it?
Yeah, they're all over with it. And actually, medically, the COVID has had we were braced for a much more serious situation in Africa, and would it seem to have had a very light touch. I think you have a younger, healthy, lean population, and the cases that we've seen have all been, you know, very mild. So I think medically, it's not going to be as big an issue. It's just more the logistical, political issues around it that have caused so much challenge for businesses across the world. But I think you're right, Justin. I think we're all looking towards solutions now rather than how bad the problem's going to be.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Dan, well, listen, as always, I highlight, you know, top five most followed companies on Vox Markets on the podcast every day. To get on that list, people have to hit that follow button. When they do, you get added to their watch list and they get their RNS straight to the front screen of your smartphone. So three reasons then, Dan. Why should someone add Hummingbird Resources to their watch list, please?
Well, I think that we have an amazing deleveraging profile in terms of the strength of our balance sheet. I think the growth outlook for Hummingbird, being internally funded with the projects in hand, is second to none. And I think our organic exploration results are really encouraging. And as we bring the results of those together in terms of resource updates, that will be exciting news, I hope.
Yeah. And I can't see the gold price softening for a long time, can you?
Well, that's the fourth reason, isn't it? If you believe in gold, then, you know, this is a good place to be, I think.
Absolutely. Marvellous stuff, Dan. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Justin. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications. You're all
right, Al? Very good morning, Just. How are you?
I'm all right. Well, I know you're into your bikes, just talking then about bikes here, and you're collecting some bikes here, and it can't be too pleasant on a bike in this weather, can it?
No. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, riding motorcycle in this weather, unless, of course, you've got a big touring bike with all the heated grips, heated seat, heated clothing, and everything. In which case you can travel distance. But no, I'm as I said, we're listeners will probably have seen a video I recorded a couple of weeks ago with Paul Jason, who is the motorcycle broker. In fact, Martin Luke, the boss of Vox Markets, took a look at it as well and found it pretty interesting. Paul was talking about a lot of the older motorcycles, and the great thing is, of course, they are viewed as wasting chattels by the Inland Revenue. So, of course, if you are just a private collector and you buy these and then sell them on a year, 2 years' time, then any gains are, of course, tax-free. So we talked about Ducatis in particular, and there are a number of very valuable Ducatis out there, but some of the older machines, some from machines from the 90s, are now going up in value too. So we're just taking a view, and we're buying a few old Ducatis.
Wasting chattels. A wasting chattel is a chattel with a useful life not exceeding 50 years. Useful life is determined at the date of acquisition, having regard to purpose of exempt from capital gains tax, and any losses on it will not be allowable. Okay. Marvellous. All right, go on.
I was going to say that that also takes into account sort of rare race bikes too. Somebody got hold of Carl Fogarty's Ducati, his world beating 996, and one of the bikes we just bought is a 996 Ducati. Now Carl Fogarty's race bike sold. The guy bought it for $25,000. It changed hands. It's now selling for £650,000. So you know that's gives you some idea of the sort of value that's being placed on these old bikes. So anyone out there, if you've got an old bike in your garage, you know, let us know what it is, and we can tell you if there's a market there or not. So it's a great thing to be in, and also great fun as well. And from a storage standpoint, it's great because it doesn't take up the space that a car would take up.
Well, it takes up more space than a chaise.
That's right.
Chattel, the word chattel is a legal term meaning an item of tangible, movable property, something you can both touch and move. Your personal possessions will normally be chattels. There we are.
I guess probably art and, pottery and, other...
Yeah, furniture, paintings, antiques, crockery, yeah. Motor cars, lorries, motorcycles, plant machinery... there we are, not fixed to a building. Cool. All right, then, so that's bikes, and get in contact with Alan if you want to sell a bike. I hope you wouldn't be sort of, drowned now, and people are just offering any old rubbish from the garage. Okay.
Send me a picture.
let's go into some stocks. What's happening with stocks?
Okay, well, I think star of the day. So it's been a fairly quiet day so far, hasn't it? But, of course, we spoke a few months ago about Gfinity. In fact, you also covered this in some length in one of your video clips, I believe. Mm-hmm. The esports provider, of course, all over the news today because Harry Redknapp, of course, the famous manager, managed Spurs and various other teams over the years and big TV star, has just placed a £300 spread bet, something like in the region of 8 million shares. He's gone long on Gfinity. And I think with good reason. And, look at what the shares are doing already this morning. I mean, the company's now got a market cap of 32 million. Shares have popped up about 8 or 9%, trading at 4.2p. And, of course, that's up from, year lows of 0.3p. So, and of course, you've had John Clark, CEO John Clark, on the podcast and on several occasions, and of course John also did an interview with Vox a short while ago just expanding on the activities Gfinity are undertaking and what their plans are. But I am still baffled by how huge this market is. It's quite astonishing. And I mean, my son and his friends are all into this, so I guess I should be, but I'm just not into esports, but I get that there's a huge market there. So of course esports,
you shouldn't be into it, Al, because your sons are. That in fact, that if you start getting into it, it'll make it uncool, so don't get into it. Okay, so leave it to the kids.
I'll leave it to the kids. Yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah. I'm too old and uncool for all this. But very happy to speculate and go from there. But of course, Gfinity, they have a tournament. They have a tournament arena in Fulham, and they do a lot of live broadcasting of competitions from there. Esports. They have a tournament builder on gaming platforms, Xbox One, of course, online TV player, tournament client, and so on. They're just selling into this vast marketplace, which is just rocketing in size. And of course, back I think it was in April this year, CEO John Clark had the idea of introducing their own advertising channel that advertisers could use to reach this market. And I think in the first month they sold £200,000 worth of advertising. So this is just a burgeoning, huge, growing industry. August, of course, they signed a landmark deal with Abu Dhabi Motorsports, launching the V10R League with Williams and Ford involved. And that they announced shortly after that the V10R League is now available on BT Sport, ESPN, and Stars Play Arabia. So it's they've signed a multi-million pound deal to those channels. They have a partnership with Venatus, that of course is the digital media partnership, which is generating huge amounts of money. They have a racinggames.gg, which is their new racing website, in September, they announced that they were launching a new platform with Cadbury Heroes Parents League, which Gfinity said is worth a six-figure sum, where one gaming influencer plays alongside a parent or guardian in a league, and that, of course, is going to be sold all over the net as well. So the progress made by the company has been remarkable, and we saw a major shareholder come in taking 4.7% on the 9th of October, Horst Geiger, whether it's a German gentleman or an organization, I've yet to find out. But this is just the latest in a raft of partnerships involved both in the Premier League, cricket, Formula One, and the progress has been quite remarkable. So the company is now worth $32 million, and they're selling into a marketplace where there are something like 2.5 billion games worldwide. The money in this is absolutely enormous, and the company are just grabbing market share hand over fist. And of course, all this is a remarkable turnaround from last year, where under the previous management, very little was being done. So I think John Clark can take the plaudits and the accolades for getting the company to where it is today.
No, fair play to John. He set out a stall, and listen, I've always liked gaming, esports, and watching Gfinity forever. But every year their financial results come out, and they burn a lot of cash. I thought, well, they can't keep, to make money, they're gonna have to cut that right back. And then John came in and focused on these three areas, which is Gfinity's digital media, which is growing massively. This didn't exist 6 months ago, the digital media side. Now, They had $130,000 of revenues in September, So they're going to have $2 million from that in the financial year next year, $2 million from that side of the business. Didn't exist before. So it's amazing that they've got JVs as well, and they've got their own offering as well. And 30 million, because they're going to be profitable, I think they're way undervalued compared to every other peer group, peer company. If you look in America, all esports companies, it's ridiculous. And that's why they did this sort of a launch of a formal sale process. I think something's going on here that will re-rate the company. I do think that. I think because there's no coincidence they got a new broker, Canaccord Genuity, big presence in America, who also published their own papers on esports. They're very bullish on esports. So that is a perfect broker for them. And they've got coverage in the US as well. So something's happening here. And I think the line that sort of gives away, if you look back to 9th of October, that review of strategic partnership options and launch a formal sale process, there's a line in there saying, the board of Gfinity, as a consequence, believes that with the group's well-positioned diverse offering, it now has the opportunity to significantly expand its growth projections. That says everything to me. That's why they've done this. And so there's a lot. I don't know what's going on, but John's a clever guy. He's very organised. He wouldn't just do this with no plan in mind. I say, he's been very organised from the start when he took over, breaking this company down into three parts, saying, I'm cutting costs, I'm going to make it profitable. And he's done that. He's done exactly what he said he'd do. And now this is very interesting. It's what's going on. Like Harry Redknapp. He's got a couple of connections, Harry Redknapp. He's a sharp cookie.
Harry Redknapp, if Harry gets behind something, he knows it's going places. I mean, look at Harry's track record in management. He was pretty good. I mean, okay, well known for taking the odd bung and the brown paper bag and the little chef on the M1 or wherever it was. But nonetheless, I mean, Harry is a sharp operator, and for him to get involved and also, okay, so that's over the weekend. The story gets featured in the Times, so come on, that says all you need to know.
I just say to holders, if you're holding this stock, just have some patience. I think that's in it, because it can drag on a little bit, and we don't know what's happening here. But the worst case scenario, if they don't file in some kind of partnership, well, I don't believe they will, they won't do anyway, but if they don't find anything, nothing comes of this formal sale process, they're still going to be a profitable esports company, and it's a very hot space. Like you say, my kids, all they want to do is play on their computers or watch YouTubers gaming, so it's a huge area. Don't bother with terrestrial TV, don't bother with it. So this is the future, and I think it's a hot, very hot space, and I just do you think we'll see this move on up the market cap size? I think it's something like, I looked at American esports companies, they're all valued at, say, 200-300 million, and they've got huge loss making as well. So I think Gfinity at 100 million is not a stretch, and that's three times where we are at the moment. I think it's undervalued. If you look at Guild, just floated 40 million, it's going to be making big losses. It's paying David Beckham 20 million. So even though they announced some good partnership numbers recently, they're paying up, they've got massive overheads. And having Beckham as a partner is an overhead. People think he owns the company or something. He owns less than 5%, and they paid him 20 million over 3 years. And ridiculous. So there we are. So I think you compare that to Gfinity and what they've got, and I think they're massively undervalued.
Yeah, well, and you know what would solve this, of course, that if they dual listed, say, on NASDAQ, the shares would go through the roof, because this to me has got Tenbagger written all over it. And for me, if they don't sell the business, or if they don't merge with another company, I think the next step is they'll list on NASDAQ, and then, you know, the valuation will go through the roof. And they may, if they announce their intention to list on NASDAQ. This is all speculation, by the way. There's nothing in the pipeline that I know of in this regard at all. But if they announce that, then of course those that were planning to make a move their hand may be forced, and they may well have to sort of come out and say, okay, yeah, we want to buy you out. So,
Americans sort of listing offering some way would make sense, because, like you say, you got Canaccord Genuity, the broker there,
yeah,
you know,
total.
And they're like very bullish on esports, and they've got that presence in America. It would make sense. I know nothing about what's happening, of course, but that would sort of make a kind of sense. But who knows? Anyway, GFIN, good. And what's next, Al?
Okay, well, this is another technology company, but also a company that has listed on the US and seen its share price in the UK rocket on the back of that.
Good pick, Al. Yes, I see what you're doing here. Mirada.
Yeah. You see what I did there? Yeah, that's it. Yeah, well, not a tenuous link, you know, a very strong link, because it just illustrates the point. This is a company called Myriad. We've spoken about Myriad before, of course. MIRI is the epic code. Company is currently worth $70 million market cap. Shares are trading at year low 5.5p and year high 38p. So more or less trading close to that the top of the range now. What I love about Myriad, it's a very simple company with a dynamic, groundbreaking offering. They place advertising content into live programming. So when you're watching a music video, when you're watching Netflix, when you're watching anything streaming, you could watch a scene in the film, Justin, you might see some cans of, or some bottles of Corona beer on the table. I might see some cans of Fuller's, or some cans of London Pride or whatever. So
I'd see some beer. And you'd see like a little bit of ladies' wine, I think, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, but maybe.
I'd see a big man's drink, Al, is what I'm saying, and you'd see a nice little glass of Prosecco for yourself.
Little glass of Prosecco for yourself. How lovely. No, but that's the point I'm illustrating. It's the advertisers can target programming. As we know, everyone today watching TV hits the skip ad button. So you wind through the ads, you record your programs, wind through the ads, and get to the other side. So advertisers are not getting value for money through the channels as they would have done 5-10 years ago. So that's the challenge. That's been the challenge to maintain advertising spend across the channels, and Myriad have developed that technology. They're first to market with it. There are other players now in the market, but they're first to market, and they've done the hard yards. They've tested this out in the marketplace. They have a huge contract in China with Tencent, and even through COVID early this year, during April, Tencent kicked off a big advertising campaign and brought a load of new clients in. They're also very conservative in their forecasting. Full-year revenues of $1.14 million, reduced operating loss. This is back in May. And then in September, what really changed is the shares were trading at around 20-25p. Myriad listed on the OTC listing in the US to give it access to the key US market and key US investors. It's working a lot with US companies, and obviously this gives the company more exposure there and an opportunity for investors to come in. And the share shot up straight away to 38p, and they've remained there ever since. And that's simply on the basis that the US market takes a different view of technology companies, as it does pharma companies. And we've seen this time and time again. In September, the company announced interim revenues had grown 109% to just under 900,000 despite COVID. 14.5 million cash in the bank. Cash burn was reduced to 4.5 million over the period from 6 million previously. Reduced operating loss and continued to trade in line with expectations. The platform has also been nominated for the best native ad platform at the DigiDay Tech Awards. And they have just launched a new music channel, solution, a music, a new artist partnership platform, and they've won the first contract on that with Mexican music label Gerencia 360 to connect brands with the roster of talent across that network. They're just selling into a huge marketplace. In the UK, they're piloted with Channel 4, so they're testing with Channel 4, and of course they've got contracts with Condé Nast, Tastemade, France TV, and so on. But this technology is gradually being embedded in all the channels we watch, and I think once they really break into the US markets and announce some major wins there, it's going to fly. And just like Gfinity, as you were saying, they've also appointed Canaccord as the second broker, and Canaccord were responsible for getting them into the US market. So, yeah, massive future. Look what the shares have done already, and I think this company has got huge growth potential from this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. It's always been quite highly rated, isn't it? Valued, you know? Because just looking at the revenues, that's nuts compared to what the valuation is. But I suppose, again, its potential is there. We don't know how big the potential is. So that's as a tech company, like, say, now with a listing in the US, so that re-rates it. And it seems like if you are tech or pharma, you know, you've got a decent sort of product there, it's just worth dual listing, isn't it? Because it just
re-rates your share price, yeah. You know? It does. If you're dual listed, particularly in pharma and tech, the US markets, and I think to an extent the European markets too, they're much more open to and they rate technology stocks far more highly. So if you can actually jump through the hoops and get your listing there as well, then it does your listing in the UK the power of good, as we've seen already with Myriad. They're now on the radar of all the fund managers in the UK with the movement, and of course having appointed Canaccord, they've got they just have exposure to so many more potential investors going forward.
Cool, marvellous. What's MIRI, what's next, Al?
Okay, so the last stock today is a company that I have discussed on another channel, a company called Red Rock Resources, RRR. And a lot of the projects, mining projects run by companies I've spoken about do have an overlap. And indeed, Red Rock Resources has the Red Rock Australasia project running currently with Power Metal Resources. And this, of course, consists of a series of projects in the Victoria region in southern Australia, and is currently a focus point for ECR Minerals and numerous other companies too. So the company describes the opportunity as a tripod of opportunities, which is the term used by the chairman Andrew Bell,
tripod of opportunities.
Yeah. Okay. A tripod. So it's a three-legged opportunity. The territory in Australia, first of all, Red Rock Australasia is 49% owned by Power Metal and 51% owned by Red Rock Resources. Consists of 11 licensed applications across 2,200 square kilometres, the key ones being around the Ballarat area. And, of course, Ballarat is there's been a gold mine in that area run by Lions Gold for many years. Ballarat is a producing mine production. I've got some production numbers somewhere. Okay. I can't find it. Where is it? Anyway, I'll come back to those. But they appointed David Holden as exploration manager a month or so ago. And David was a retired geologist, worked for the New Zealand government, worked for many companies around the area. And he started work again for Lion Gold's Ballarat mine in 2018, providing technical advice, and has been appointed the exploration manager. So a number of the properties that license areas that are owned by Red Rock dovetail into the Ballarat goldfield. And just as with ECR, you've got the Kresik, you have the Kresik geological anomaly that runs through Ballarat. The other side of it is covered by the Red Rock Resources license area. So currently undergoing some sampling and we are expecting sort of progress on the Victoria projects in the near future. VictorOil has, of course, been restricted by COVID, which has just emerged from. That has resulted in some delays this year, but nonetheless, we're now coming out the other side and expect to hear some progress. So the second leg of the tripod is the Kenya Migori gold project. There have been some problems with the government in Kenya in regard to the projects, but they've had a tiger of a lawyer on the ground there, and basically that actually relates to the Congo project. I'm just going around circles here, right? Okay, so the Migori gold project.
It's that tripod. You're tripping over the legs. I think you are.
I'm tripping over the legs. I'm walking around tripping over the legs. That's right. So the Migori gold project, they have 100% economic interest in. There's a JORC resource estimate of 1.2 million ounces of gold, and of course this is in the long-established Kenyan greenstone belt, the team are back on the ground there. The resumption of works will take place shortly. They've got the exploration team on the ground, and the data room has been set up to extrapolate the data as and when the work starts. So some news is due on that very shortly. I then mentioned the Makolda tailing project, which is also part of the Migori project, the tailings will be looked at. There's at the historical Makolda copper and gold mine in the region too. The third leg is the VVP copper and cobalt joint venture which Red Rock owns 50% of, and this is in the DRC, three projects, and this is where they have had the problems with the government, and they have a lawyer on the ground that has basically worked with the government and has re-established the licenses so the company can progress and get on with the work. And this has all taken place within the past 8 weeks, so it's been a big turnaround for the company. Now, the cobalt and copper licenses are in the heart of the Central African copper belt, and you've got operating majors within about 4 or 5 kilometres, which include China Nonferrous Gold, Barrick Gold, First Quantum Minerals, FE Limited, and these other mining companies are operating again on this major copper and cobalt deposit. So it's an exciting opportunity, and I think we're going to see some progress on this before Christmas. There's an estimated 400,000 tons of copper in the ground there, with 25,000 tons of cobalt, and a potential in situ value of 125 billion. But clearly, that's an estimate that will require a lot of validation before they can start to justify those sort of numbers. The company also has a number of other interests in Colombia and an oil project in West Africa. Raised 1 million in a placing at 0.8p earlier this year, and of course the company is run by Andrew Bell, who's a veteran chairman. He's also chairman at Power Metal Resources, former chairman at Greatland Gold, and of course Regency Mines some time back. The company is currently worth $6.5 million. So if you look at what's happened to the ECR share price, look what's happened to the Power Metal share price, Red Rock really is lagging the performance of a lot of the junior mining companies that have exploded in value this year. So any progress at any one of these three projects, the tripod of projects, I think is going to see the share price continue to make significant progress as we go forward.
Yeah, well, we'll see. They don't trip over those three legs there, and I've got no at the moment, unless the resource company is starting to produce. I've got no appetite for them at all. They've got to be in safe jurisdictions as well. In my mind, there's enough risk out there, So sure. Decent jurisdictions, and I want being close to generating real value. By that I mean cash. Listen, resource. You can earn a lot of money trading on resource stocks. They're very volatile, some of them, and they can pop up from nowhere, and they can do a double overnight. Even more than that. But it's very volatile. It's a bit of a trader's market, really, isn't it? Resource stocks.
Yeah, very much so. I agree completely. But I think certainly in terms, I agree with you on the production front. Clearly, if you're in production, that's great. But and of course, the projects have to go through the validation stages, the sampling, the JORC resource estimate number, and then of course feasibility study, and then on to putting a mine into the ground and getting the stuff out. So the projects are all a long way from that, but certainly the Australian project, I think, is the that's really the one that's in focus, simply because there's so much other activity in the area. And of course, we know with ECR sold three of the licenses, the Avoca, the Timor, and the Moranbah projects to Fosterville South Exploration, and their share price, the Fosterville share price exploded on the back of getting those licenses, and also the work it's doing at Golden Mountain, also in the Victoria area. So yeah, you know, there's a huge amount of activity there, and I think that's probably where the news that's going to drive the share price higher is most likely, in my opinion, to come from there. So yeah, okay. keep your ears to the ground.
Not in this way, it's too cold. I prefer sitting on a sofa in the living room, to be honest. Right, marvel stuff, chase that out, and we'll speak next week.
Just speaking next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Symphony Environmental Technologies. I did do a video on those on the weekend. On the weekend, I should say, not weekends. New one weekend. I do hold that company, I've said before, but I like them a lot. Their tech is you know, covering a lot of hot base at the moment, plastics, and of course, antimicrobial protective sort of plastics. At four, Alien Metals, up 11% there to 1.9. At three, Amiga Diagnostics, non-move at 98 pence. At two, Vela Technologies, up 27% to 25% now, to 0.113. And at one, Faro Alloy Resources, up 2.8% to 11.15. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Alien Metals, M&A update. At four, Yourgene Health, half-year trading update. At three, Cafe Gold and Copper, new company presentation. At two, progress on asset-backed debt financing, placing to raise 1.7 million. And Beatser Ply update, that's a vast resources. And at one, Bazant Resources half year report. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.